Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on, Viola Fletcher, 107-year-old Tulsa race massacre survivor, asked Congress reparations, challenging America. When will justice be served?
But first, silence is not an option. Reverend William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign and president of Repairers of the Breach, similarly to Martin Luther King's Beyond Vietnam speech in 1964, draws connections between global systems of oppression, from militarism to racism to classism, and hammers home the importance of solidarity with Palestine.
I bring you greetings from the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival. We are God's children, we are America, and we are determined that we will not allow the 140 million poor and low-wealth people in this country to be ignored anymore. Now, I come to you today with the support of all of these institutions and networks, but I also come to you as a person with particular experiences. I am, as you can see, a black man. There are many people in this country who think the situation in Palestine is so far away that it has little to do with us. I just came from hearings on Capitol Hill and in Richmond, Virginia, where we were standing with children who've been separated from their families by immigrant enforcement officers and water shutoffs and denial of access to health care and other basic services and racist voter suppression. And it might be tempting to think that we have enough domestic issues right here at home, that it is someone else's task to address the rights of Palestinians halfway around the world. But I know from my own personal story in this country that we cannot talk about justice without addressing the displacement of native peoples wherever they are. We cannot talk about justice without addressing the systemic racism of colonialism. We cannot talk about justice without addressing government repression. We cannot talk about justice without addressing our own divisions, even within the movement. Our search for truth and for justice cannot be found in narrow tribalism. So I'm here today to talk about what's required if we are to be, from a deeply religious moral values perspective, human in the midst of the shared injustices we have all inherited from the lies of colonialism and white supremacy. They said it was their manifest destiny, they believed, to subdue the land that was promised to them, no matter who was already there. It must be noted that the same colonialist mindset that enslaved black bodies and called it Christian also has been used by some to displace Palestinian families and call it pro-Israel. But based on even the ancient Hebrew scriptures, this cannot be true. Leviticus 19:34 says, "You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you. You shall love him or them as yourself." Leviticus 24:22, "You shall have the same law and equality for the sojourner and the native." Often when I was young, I heard fellow Christians talk about the nation state of Israel. I didn't ever hear much, especially from the TV preachers who talked so much about Israel, but I didn't hear much about the Palestinian people who were already living on that land when the largest numbers of European Jews fleeing terrible oppression in their own European countries settled in Palestine, just as I didn't hear them talking about my people's story either. I didn't hear much about Palestinians, Palestinian rights, and the desperate moral need for equality in that land, like in any country, for all people who live there, whatever religion, whatever race. I learned that I can't be faithful to who I am if I don't speak up when the lies of power and systemic racism cause us to overlook someone else. To write people off because of their nationality or their religion or race isn't simply an injustice against them. It is a violation of God's moral law to bring together everyone who holds to that moral obligation, that we recognize our Palestinian neighbors as fellow humans who deserve human rights. I'm here not naive, not unaware of the complexities, but to join the chorus of those honoring the Imago Dei of every living soul and created person. To hold fast the image of God in every person is to insist that the Palestinian child is as precious as the Jewish child, that all of God's children have rights. And we must stand against hatred toward Jews and toward Palestinians, toward Israel and toward Palestine. And we must also acknowledge that we have pain and trauma in our past that makes it difficult for us to recognize God's image in one another. But we must. Historically, it is important for us to remember that one path regarding the Zionist project in Palestine was a colonialist project from the beginning, according to Theodore Herzl. Some say the founder of modern or a form of modern Zionism. He knew that his proposal for a modern nation state for the Jewish people was a colonialist project, and he pitched it to Britain's great colonialist Cecil Rhodes as just that. It was never just purely about righting the terrible wrongs of the Holocaust from his perspective, but for him it was about expanding the global empire, and you can't ignore that if you know history. But on the other hand, Jews like Albert Einstein were always against this type of philosophy undergirding a Zionist project, even though Einstein was clear, he was clear that the Jewish people had a right to safety, protect freedom from the horrors of genocide and the evil of the Holocaust. Einstein said, this led Einstein to write, "I am afraid of the inner damage Judaism will sustain, especially from the development of a narrow nationalism within our own ranks." That is why there is nothing anti-Semitic about pointing out the dangers of extreme nationalism. The Pope has done it. Others have done it. In fact, there have always been Jewish people as far back as the spiritual prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, they pointed it out, all the way to a scientific genius like Einstein and others, eager on the one hand to hold on to the heart of their traditions, who saw that making a deal with the empire wouldn't only hurt Palestinians, it would diminish. What is the state's, any state's responsibility to all people? Because people have rights. People have rights. And those rights supersede even the power sometimes and the vision and the goals of a state. I am committed to the image of God in every person. I must stand against any policy that institutionalizes the lies of division. When my own government imposes policies based on inhumanity, whether an economic system that keeps 140 million people in this country poor and low wealth, or dividing families and jailing children at the border, or passing voter suppression laws, or mass incarceration of poor people and people of color, and the U.S. imposing a Muslim ban, or waging wars that kill hundreds and thousands of Iraqis, Afghanistan, Yemen, Syrians, Somalis, and so many others, we must stand up and say no with no exception. If you believe in the image of God, and that is why when Israel violates international law and the human rights of Palestinians, we stand up and say no, no accession. If someone in the name of loving Palestinians embraces terrorism and killing of innocent people, children, we stand up and say no. I'm a Christian who honors one who chose the way of love and nonviolence, not as a fetish, nor as a tactic, but as a way of life, even in the face of terrorism and state crucifixion. In this country, We have a particular obligation to address the rights of Palestinian people because our tax money pays the $3.8 billion that the U.S. sends directly to the Israeli military every year. And the Bible teaches me where your money is, that's where your heart is. And our communities suffer from the extraordinary lack of access to funds for health care, education, jobs, and more, while there is never a lack of money to send billions to Israel. And our government protects Israeli military and political officials from ever being held accountable for their violations of international law, violations of human rights, even war crimes, and props up the wrong embraced by Netanyahu and his cohorts. And some of our police departments go to training by Israel National Police and Military, teaching our law enforcement officers the things they have learned in dealing with an occupied population, and we must challenge that. Because the most damnable violence is always policy violence, the systemic use of power to privilege some and exclude others. We must confront the injustices against Palestinians because much of it is injustice carried out on our dime in our name. In the face of such extreme injustices, it would be its own kind of violence not to speak out. We would be committing violence if we did not speak out. Instead, I choose to stand here today and remind you, even in these times, Mark, you're exactly right. Frederick Douglass, who spoke out after the terrible Dred Scott decision when the Supreme Court of this nation said that a black man has no right that a white man is bound to respect. And people came to Frederick Douglass and said, it's over. Everything's over. There's no need of fighting anymore. It was a trying time in the abolition movement. Some said the freedom movement might never come. Some were saying we had to give up on the Constitution, give up on moral suasion, give up, give up. And at that low moment in the struggle against the dehumanization of a race-based colonialist system, Douglass stood up and said, in one point of view, we, the abolitionists and the colored people, should meet this decision unlooked for and as monstrous as it appears, but we should meet it with a cheerful spirit. This very attempt to blot out forever the hopes of an enslaved people may be one necessary link in the chain of events preparatory to the downfall and complete overthrow of the whole slave system. The whole history of the anti-slavery movement is studded with proof that all measures devised and executed with a view to ally, and diminish the anti-slavery agitation have only served to increase, intensify, and embolden the agitation. In this moment, when evangelicals have linked up with Zionist extremists and the corporate fascism of white nationalists around the world, it may seem like this campaign's goal of Palestinian rights is at a low point, but I stop by today to say that in an unexpected way, our present troubles may increase, intensify, and embolden the agitation for Palestinian rights and for all human rights around the world. We are starting to recognize how we are all connected, that the same corporate interests that use white nationalism to put Trump in the White House and lean into Zion extremism, they are the same ones that also want to cut taxes for corporations and deregulate corporations and ignore climate science and take away health care and deny living wages and put up voter suppression and take away social safety nets and give more and more money to the U.S. military. If they are cynical enough to be together, we ought to be smart enough to come together and no longer fight in our silos. The good news is that if we come together, there are more of us than there are of them. And if we come together right, thank God Almighty, some of them have even joined us and will have to join us because our moral witness will convict them and convert them and show them that they've been traveling the wrong road of humanity. So, my friends, it's time to come together. We must link up and together demand that Israeli government recognize the humanity of all people, regardless of religion, language, race, or anything else. Inside Israel, the new basic law stating that the right of self-determination belongs only to Jews must be reversed and replaced with a law that ensures that all rights are equally accessible to all. In the West Bank, Israeli military control over the Palestinian population should be ended, and the population of Jewish-only settlement should be disarmed so that the entire population of the West Bank lives under one set of laws, not the current apartheid system of two sets of laws for two parts of the population based on religion, race, and language. In Gaza, the siege that prohibits people from entering and leaving the strip and that allows Israel to determine what does and does not enter the strip should be ended so that Gazians can rebuild their territory and have the same rights as Israelis to come and go from their homeland. For Palestinian refugees, the long-standing denial of their internationally recognized right of return should be ended, and a just solution to the refugee situation based on that right should be implemented. The United States must reverse its political and moves on Jerusalem, its political moves, and its moves that only serve to foster more distrust, more hate. We must end the policy of preventing investigations and indeed providing uncritical protection of Israel's potential violations of human rights and of international humanitarian law. At the same time, Palestinians must continue relying on the principles of nonviolence that have long characterized the Palestinian freedom movement, such as the first Intifada and uprisings of 1987 and 1992. I have not been to Palestine. I hope to go. And I do not pretend to know fully what my Palestinian siblings have suffered, nor what my Jewish family must consider when they remember the Holocaust. But I do know trauma. I've known it personally. And my people have known it in this land since before there was a nation state called the USA. Yes, terrible things have been done. But I still believe that when we all get together, we can become something that has never been yet. The great prayer of the Jewish prophets that always reminded Israel in ancient Israel never to get high-minded and never to treat the people around them in a mean way. There was the prophets that said that's not God's way. It was the prophets who said, like Isaiah 2, there must come a day when swords become plowshares, spears become pruning hooks, and a nation will not even train for war, let alone engage war, but will not train and come up with new systems of death and destruction. But down during slavery, it looked like justice had lost. But when Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass and some white Quakers and some white evangelicals of that day, when they got together, they formed a fusion movement that brought about abolition. Women didn't have the right to vote. Sometimes we are told it was Sojourner Truth and a Quaker named Lucretia Mott and others. When they got together, they won the right to vote. Plessy versus Ferguson looked like it was the law of the land forever, separate but equal. One guy dissented, Justice Harlan out of Kentucky, and it was upon his dissent that Charles Hamilton Houston and then later Thurgood Marshall got white lawyers together and black lawyers together and Jewish lawyers, and they went before an all-white Supreme Court with one member who was a member of the KKK, but when they got together, even that member had to vote unanimously that separate but equal was unconstitutional. It looked like Jim Crow had beaten us down, and had beaten down injustice, couldn't rise again. But when Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and Malcolm and Bayard Rustin and Glenn Smiley and Jonathan Daniels and Viola Wusa, a white woman, and Rabbi Heschel and James Reed and others, when they all began to work against it, Jim Crow had to come down. So I know it biblically. I know it historically. I know it, and we have to know it so that we don't give up fighting. We have to know the power of our coming together. We have to know that it's just our time. Others had to stay together before us, and it's just our time. That's why you're alive now, to join with somebody, to bring somebody together. Whether we're Jewish or Christian or Muslim or Sikh or Hindu, or whether we're not believers at all, we have to at some point come together, whether from a humanist perspective or a faith perspective, to believe that there is certain value in everybody, that there's a certain created nature, a certain imago dei, a certain innateness, an inalienableness, a right that belongs not to states but to people. And when we come together, We can change the world. Because I'm here to tell you, when we all get together, we can walk again. We can march again. We can change things again. And that's what it's going to take in order for the Palestinians to have their rights. In order for all people, Jewish and Palestinian, Christian and Muslim, to exist together. I'm a witness that when we all get together and honor the Imago Dei and everybody, that's when we can remake the world. James Baldwin said it. We made this world we live in. We can make it again, but we can't remake it again by ourselves. It's time for us to come together, and when we all come together, what a day of justice it will be for Palestinians, for Jewish, for all of us, when we all come together. Hallelujah.
We're building bridges, as did Reverend William Barber to Palestine. And as people who are descendants of Jewish Holocaust survivors and the freedom fighters of the Warsaw Ghetto, we say there is nothing anti-Semitic about denouncing extreme ethnic nationalism.
Rather, it is a duty to stand with people to make state power responsible to all people, and for equal rights and justice for the Palestinian people. Now reparations and a reckoning for America to deal with its Tulsa race massacre.
I have never seen justice, said Tulsa race massacre survivor Viola Fletcher, a 107-year-old survivor of the 1921 Tulsa race massacre, before a House committee on the need for the nation to make amends for the deadly attack on the Greenwood District in Tulsa, Oklahoma, known as the Black Wall Street, a 35-block radius in the segregated community that was thriving with hundreds of businesses, where on May 31st through June 1st, 1921, the entire area was burned down by a white mob and killing hundreds of black residents and injuring 800 others. Let's listen to Viola Fletcher.
First witness is Miss Viola Fletcher, also known, if I can, Mother Fletcher. Thank you. Mother Fletcher is the oldest living survivor of the Tulsa race massacre. She was 7 years old when she lived through the massacre. Mother Fletcher, you are now recognized to testify.
My name is Viola Ford Fletcher. I'm the daughter of Lucinda Ellis and John Wesley Ford of Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm the sister of Hughes Van Ellis, who is also here today. I'm a survivor of the Tulsa race massacre. 2 weeks ago, I celebrated my 107th birthday. Today, I'm visiting Washington, D.C. for the first time in my life. I'm here seeking justice, and I'm asking my country to acknowledge what happened in Tulsa in 1921. On May 31st in 21, I went to bed in my family's home in Greenwood, neighbors of Tulsa. The neighborhood I felt asleep in that night was rich, not just in terms of wealth, but in culture, community, heritage, and my family had a beautiful home. We had great neighbors, and I had friends to play with. I felt safe. I had everything a child could need. I had a bright future ahead of me. Greenwood should have given me the chance to truly make it in this country. Within a few hours, all of that was gone. The night of the massacre, I was awakened by my family. My parents and 5 siblings were there. I was told we had to leave, and that was it. I will never forget the violence of the white mob when we left our home. I still see black men seeing being shot, black bodies lying in the street. I still smell smoke and see fire. I still see black businesses being burned. I still hear airplanes flying overhead. I hear the screams. I have lived through the massacre every day. Our country may forget this history, but I cannot. I will not. And other survivors do not. and our descendants do not. When my family was forced to leave Tulsa, I lost my chance of an education. I never finished school past the fourth grade. I have never made much money in my country. State and city took a lot from me. Despite this, I spent time supporting the war effort in the shipyards of California. But most of my life, I was a domestic worker serving white families. I never made much money. To this day, I can barely afford my everyday needs. All the while, the city of this Tulsa have unjustly used the names and stories of victims like me to enrich myself and its white allies through the 30 million raised by the Tulsa Centennial Commissioner while I was continue to live in poverty. I am 107 years old and have never been seen justice. I pray that one day I will. I have been blessed with a long life and have seen the best and the worst of this country. I think about the terror, horror inflicted upon black people in this country every day. This subcontinuum Committee has the power to lead us down a better path. I'm asking that my country acknowledge what has been happened to me, the traumas and the pain, the loss, and I ask the survivors and descendants to be given the chance to seek justice, open the door. All of you know how easy it is to deny that a violent mob threatened your lives and took your property. For 70 years, the city of Tulsa and its stream of charmers told us that the massacre didn't happen, like we didn't see it with our own eyes. You have me here right now. You see Mother Randall, you see my brother, Hughes Van Ellis. We live this history, and we can't ignore it. It's our lives with us. Oh, my goodness. We lost everything that day, our homes, our churches, our newspapers, our theaters, our lives. Greenwood represented all the best of what was possible for black people in America, and for all the people. No one cared about us for almost 100 years. We and our history have been forgotten, washed away. This Congress must recognize us and our history. For black America, for the white Americans, and for all Americans, that's some justice.
Thank you very much. We appreciate very much your testimony. Mother Fletcher, if we don't learn from history, we're doomed to repeat it. So thank you for putting us on the right course to learn and to understand and to do better.
America, when will justice be served, asked Viola Fletcher, 107-year-old survivor of the Tulsa Race Massacre.
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Stay strong, stay well, and educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people. For another world is possible.